Case for argument, United States versus Mick Leshinsky, Mr. Hickstein Foley.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I will be arguing the first issue raised in the brief and resting on the argument already made in the second issue. Judges, in this case, the government indicted the defendant for a violation of the Hobbs Act and identified his role specifically as being an agent of the victims. And the inducement for the bribery that was alleged is under color of official right. Since defendant is a private individual indicted as an agent of the victims, he stands in the position of the victim. And so the issue here is whether, in effect, a victim can be a co-conspirator of the Hobbs Act under color of official right. And McLean, previously decided by this court, clearly says no. There's two levels of identity, I believe, with regard to Mr. Malatinsky here that have been alluded to in the government's briefing. I'd like to address those. One is the general proposition that a private citizen can be liable under an official right theory. And McLean again says no. McLean specifically says without an inducement of fear being expressed by the private individual in effect that I have an intent to injure you and I have the ability to carry it out, that there is no ability for the private citizen to extort under color of official right. And in this case, of course, there was no fear alleged by, as a prong, alleged by the indictment. But even more so, more narrowly focused here for Mr. Malatinsky is the question that is raised by the indictment. He is, the government specifically says, you are an agent of the victim. And in placing him in that position, and again, as I stated, if he's an agent of the victims, he's standing in the victim's shoes, then McLean again says that the statute prohibits a person, that the statute specifically prohibits a victim from being a principal in an extortion. It can't be. That's what the statute says. The government in this case cites as authority for their proposition the Wright case from the Fifth Circuit, which I didn't specifically discuss in my reply brief, but would like to do so here. In that case, the a lawyer who previously had been a public official with the city and had gone into private practice had engaged in a scheme with the then current prosecutor, the position that this attorney previously held, to conduct themselves in a bribery scheme. And by that, what happened was the prosecutor had a criminal traffic case, excuse me, where a referral for a civil matter. Where he made a referral for a civil matter and mentioned several attorneys, one of the attorneys being the defendant Wright. The civil matter was settled, and the public official and defendant Wright had an agreement whereby part of the proceeds from the settlement to be paid to the law firm would be kicked back to the public official as a referral fee, so-called referral fee. And in that case, the defendant Wright and the public official were both convicted of violating the Hobbs Act. Specifically, defendant Wright, who was the attorney, was convicted as an aider and abettor. And the government argues in that case that because the defendant Wright unsuccessfully argued to the Fifth Circuit that he was in fact only a victim because he was the payor of the check, that is analogous to the case here where Mr. Malatinsky was facilitating the bribe from the CDL applicants to the DMV officials. But that case, the Wright case, is actually very different from this case, because in the Wright case, the victim alleged to be the law firm who was the recipient of the settlement payment. But the law firm didn't know that they were involved in an extortion scheme. They didn't know that there was bribery involved here, whereas in the Malaczynski case, the CDL applicants were well aware that they were paying bribes to Mr. Malaczynski and then from there to the DMV officials. So, in effect, those cases do not stand on the same level. And, in effect...
I don't understand. Malaczynski, he's like a bag man, right? He may be an agent of the victim. The victims, of course, are people themselves engaged in illegal activity and bribery. But he's also working for the... and helping the officials who accept the bribes.
But Judge, no, the real question here is, could he be, I think is what you're saying, is based on his conduct, can he be guilty? And he's guilty, as the jury found, under the racketeering count. But he can't be guilty under the under official right theory.
But the officials are the extorters, and he's their aider and abettor or co-conspirator, isn't he?
But he was indicted as an agent of the victim. And how can he be an agent of the victim and an agent of the extorter?
Well, the government points out there's another paragraph to that count in which they do incorporate by reference saying that he was acting in coordination with the DMV. Doesn't that bring it in?
No, I don't think it does, Judge, because, again, if... you can't indict him as an agent of the victim. Then he should have been indicted simply as an aider and abettor. But here they're saying that we're going to put you in the shoes of the victim. And yet McLean says the victim can't be guilty as a principal in the extortion. Mr. Malaczynski may be guilty of the racketeering, but he's not guilty. He can't be guilty legally under the theory that's espoused in that count.
Well, would you agree that the indictment, apart from that, includes acted in coordination with the Secretary of State's office? And did they charge him that way?
Judge, if you're reading, I don't have the indictment.
Well, I'm looking at their brief at page 14.
Then that's how they indicted him, yes. But nevertheless, Judge, it wasn't just as an aider and abettor. It was as the agent of the victim. And
well,
that's legally impossible.
They also said he conspired.
Correct.
Why isn't that good enough?
It's not good enough because it's good enough under the racketeering, but it's not good enough when the victim can't conspire. That's what McLean says. The victim can't conspire. He can't be guilty as a principal. He cannot be found liable under the official right clause. So I don't think just because they throw in conspiracy all of a sudden that makes it okay legally to charge the victim as a principal, which is what happened here.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Santoli. Ms. Bonamici?
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. Your Honor, the defendant, Malaczynski, was fairly convicted of count two of the superseding indictment, which properly charged that the defendant conspired with and aided and abetted extortion by the public officials Marianne Mastrodomenico and Phyllis Volpe. The defendant's argument is entirely based on a faulty premise, which is that the indictment charged the defendant as a victim or as an agent of the victim.
Isn't that what it said?
No, that's not what it said, Your Honor.
Read what it said then, Bill.
The count two of the indictment first incorporates by reference the beginning paragraph of count two.
Get your second paragraph in that same count. The second paragraph of that same count.
Count two.
Right.
Count two says that during the period charged, the defendant and others known and unknown to the grand jury conspired to commit extortion. It goes on to state the element.
Which obstruction, delay, and effect commerce consisted in summary of an agreement that Fed Ditch instead of Convolpe would obtain property of foreign cash raised unqualified applicants and their agents, including the defendant, our defendant, their agents, including the defendant.
That's correct. The interpretation of this paragraph...
That doesn't mean that he's the agent?
Well, what it does mean is that he's the agent of the victim for the purpose of delivering the cash payment.
But the point is that it does claim that he's the agent of the victim.
For a limited purpose, but in context...
I got that.
Okay.
You started out saying the indictment didn't say that, but it does.
And what I should have said was that it doesn't say that entirely and exclusively.
It is not an exclusive reason for finding liability, criminal liability, in this defendant. You're quite correct.
Absolutely not. What it does is it establishes his role. What it does, actually... is indicate...
Would you concede that the indictment could have been more artfully drafted?
Perhaps, Your Honor. I would concede that.
Splendid thought in the future.
Yes.
Is it boilerplate or is it something drafted for this case?
No, Your Honor. I don't know that the drafting the indictment was part of the record, but it's not my understanding that it was boilerplate in answer to your question.
It's tailor-made, so it could be changed.
He was kind of a double mole. That is to say that he's hired by some people, and then he goes to the authorities to get it, and he has to bribe them, but he keeps a piece of the bribe himself, so he's participating in the whole program.
Sort of a double agent.
Right.
Exactly, Your Honor, as we said in our brief. But
an agent, a mole, what?
The key point in an extortion case is whose consent was induced. And the indictment makes clear that the consent that was induced was the consent of the CDL applicant. And the next question is, who paid the money? The indictment makes clear that the money was paid by the CDL applicants and that the defendant was merely the conduit of the money.
Conduit, and some of it stuck to him, too. But,
well, that's right. And that's the third question. The third question is, who got the money? And the people who got the money included the defendant. The defendant was clearly a co-conspirator and an aider and abettor and a part of this conspiracy as it was alleged in the indictment.
But suppose the defendant had been hired just to forward a bribe. Would he be guilty of extortion?
Your Honor,
someone comes to him and says, "You know, I'd like to give $1,000, get my license, and I'm bashful about it, so I'd prefer for you to carry the envelope to the officials."
In other words, if he were recruited solely by the CDL applicants in this
right,
case,
to help them get,
Well, I think that presents a much harder question, but that, of course, is not what was alleged in the indictment in this
That's
case.
That's the problem with the use of the word agent, isn't it? But if he were purely an agent, you know, he just carries the money for them, then he's really just the same as they are, isn't he?
I think that would be a valid way of looking at that set of facts, but that's not the set of facts that's presented here. That's not the set of facts that's alleged in this indictment. This indictment charges quite specifically that he was part of the organization. The organization was set up that included, the organization included the public officials. He was on the public official side. And he
worked with the corrupt official to shake down the guy that hired him to get the license.
Exactly right, Your Honor. And as you point out, the fact that he took a portion of the proceeds for himself puts to rest any question. And the fact that was alleged specifically in the indictment puts to rest.
Or at the very least, he's violating the principle of agency law by being...
by being a double agent.
The problem is, I suppose, if you read that last sentence in isolation, that's where the problem is.
That's exactly right. And the law is clear that is not what he needs to do. The indictment has to be read in its entirety and in context, and it has to be given a practical construction, not a hyper-technical construction that elevates one single clause to the exclusion of the remainder of the indictment. For this reason, Your Honor, the government would request that the defendant's conviction and sentence be affirmed in this case.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bonamici. Ms. Hickstein-Foley, do you have anything further you'd like to say? Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? Well, the court thanks you for your effort, for accepting the appointment and your efforts on behalf of your client. And the court will be in recess until 9:30 Monday morning.